The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
And welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am here live in front of a live studio audience.
Hey guys.
At the East Meadow Public Library for our 104th live show. I am joined by my co-host, Elma and Jenny Felty.
Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone.
And we have our special guest who is the director right now. We're going to be talking to, with, and about him, which is awesome because he's here. He is comic book creator and comic book distributor, Phil Russert.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to, with, and about Phil in just a few minutes, but before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's Morphin' Time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi
for your Wi-Fi!
As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc. You're throwing me off. Don't look. You're throwing me off.
Don't look.
www.bigapplecc.com. The tickets, the next convention is scheduled all the way from November the 21st. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out a shout-out for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, Waterwing director Jared Burrell, Newsday famous Resin Media, Shad Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, and Emily Portes. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com. The little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated. A book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source, the war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 is on sale right now. Alright, so as always, we always start off with the sad news. Let's see what we have here. One of the original creators of the He-Man toy designer, Roger Sweet, died recently after he was moved to a memory care facility earlier this year. He was 91. Roger Sweet, you're a fan of He-Man, Jen? Do you know of He-Man? You should know He-Man.
Yeah, right. Of course.
So the guy who created the toy He-Man, which turned into the Avenger franchise, he was the one that made it, and he passed away.
Do you
have any words on your experience with He-Man? Did you play with He-Man? She-Ra, maybe?
No.
You just knew it existed.
No, I know it existed. Pass.
All right.
Lifeline.
I had all
Lifeline.
The toys. Of course I had all the toys.
There you go.
So
I was a big fan of the comic books that came, the first storyline that came out with the figures before the cartoon.
So the Barbarian story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. I do remember I was a He-Man fan. I still am, I guess, occasional He-Man. I am concerned about the movie. I have not seen a trailer yet, the live-action movie. A little worried about it, but we'll just wait and see.
Wait, what concerns you?
Well, I mean, the last live-action He-Man was a really bad movie.
Oh, really?
So I'm worried that this is going to be the same way. I have not seen any trailers, but I'm just concerned that they're not going to have enough of Eternia He-Man stuff. And, as you may not know, the villain is played by Jared Leto. And Jared Leto is box office poison. Because the last couple of movies he's been in have tanked.
Well, he's only doing the
voice. You know what, though? I like his stuff. That's the thing. That's where I don't care what society thinks. Because I saw him in the Gucci movie. He was the best part. I think he won, a Razzie for Worst Actor.
Yeah.
He was the best part of the entire thing. Requiem, he was phenomenal. I saw a little of this Joker thing with Harley Quinn. He was great. What's the problem? So what? He has a cult...
Like I said, the problem is that his movies that he decides to work on make no money. So that
he's only the voice of Skeletor, at least. It's all CGI.
I'm concerned. But I remember I was a kid and the He-Man toy came out at the animated series, the Filmation series.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is this? Because I was a fan of the Barbarian. It was a roaming Barbarian. It had a different mythology.
The sorceress.
Yeah, it had a different mythology than what the cartoon was. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, well, this is some crap. But I gave it a chance. Okay. And as a kid, it won me over. And I became a fan of both versions of He-Man ever since.
Well, you know, Dark Horse did an omnibus of those original comics.
Yeah.
I own, so that's pretty cool.
So he was 91. So moving on, more sad news. Actor Donald Richard Gibb also died recently after, quote, a long illness. While Donald was in a handful of movies and TV shows, he is perhaps best remembered for his role as Ray Jackson in the Van Damme film Bloodsport and his sequel Bloodsport Part 2, as well as Ogre, whose real name in this show was Frederick Eluasis Palawaski, in three of the four Revenge of the Nerd films. He was 71. Did you ever watch Revenge of the Nerds?
Yes.
You remember Ogre? The big guy, the big bad guy.
You know what? I forgot everything. I forget a lot of things. Listen, you want to talk health or psychology or something on this show, I'm your girl. If you want me to talk about
Revenge
comics,
of the Nerds,
I never know. Like,
it's,
you know,
it's a movie, Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, and I forgot, though. I saw it like 30 years ago. You know? I mean, like, you know, I forgot how I clipped my toenails 30 years ago. I don't remember. Well, I don't know.
So, you a fan of Revenge of the Nerds?
I remember well, yes.
Well, thank God someone does, you know. So, maybe I should be in the memory care unit, you know, He-Man.
I was of the generation where you were too young to see it, your parents showed it to you anyway, so.
Right.
I do remember just the fact that he was Ogre, and that's just who he became. Mm-hmm. And so I always, whenever I see him in any other TV show or movie or anything, I'm like, hey, it's Ogre. I always like seeing people get jobs. Mm-hmm. And when he did the Van Damme movie, Bloodsport, he was the big burly guy who was Van Damme's friend in the movie. And I was like, hey, Ogre is moved on. And in the course of the nerd's world, it actually turns out that he was a closet nerd. And in part four, he came out as a nerd, and he was part of the group. So they won him over from the villain in the first movie.
Yeah, I didn't make it to four. I got through the first two.
And that was it? You didn't see three?
No. All right.
So he was 71. So then we move on to the last bit of sad news.
All right, great.
Writer Gerald Francis Conway, better known as just Jerry Conway, also died recently from pancreatic cancer. Jerry was a comic book writer and co-created such characters as The Punisher, Ben Reilly, Firestorm, Power Girl, and Jason Todd, just to name a few. Jerry also wrote such films as Fire and Ice, which I love that movie, Conan the Destroyer, which I did not know he wrote, and worked on such TV shows as G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, the original Transformers cartoon, The Centurions, My Little Pony, Dino Sources, Dino Riders, Follow Dowling Mysteries, that was with Tom Bosley, Batman the Animated Series, Spider-Man the Animated Series, Hercules Legendary Journeys, and Law and Order, Criminal Intent, just to name a few. He was 73. I knew he was a comic guy. I had no idea he did all this other stuff. You a fan of any of those things, Phil?
Yeah, plenty of them.
What was your, you remember Fire and Ice? Like, I used to love.
That's one of my favorite animated stories, so absolutely.
Jen, are you?
I would like to see him do a mashup of the My Little Pony with Law and Order. See? Combining those crossovers. That would be really cool.
It's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because there is a movie out now, I think it's out now,
uh-huh.
that Hugh Jackman is in it, and he plays a sheep herder, an animal herder, and all the animals are talking. Sheep detective, yeah. And they're trying to solve his murder. So there you go. That's close enough, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So he was 73.
Pretty
so
young.
That's it for the sad news. So moving on to the not as sad news from the
That's a lot of nuts
department. The new Devil Wears Prada sequel has taken the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in an additional $41.6 million in ticket sales in its second week of release, beating out the new Mortal Kombat sequel, which came in the number two spot, making $38.5 million in its first release. For those of you keeping track, the Super Mario Bros. Movie is the highest grossing film of this year with $412.6 million, followed by Project Hail Mary with $328.9 million. Phil? Devil Wears Prada? Yes, no?
Couldn't care less.
Hail Mary? Project Hail Mary? Or sci-fi?
I didn't see it yet. I heard it was really good, though.
And Super Mario, did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Jen?
I want to see my dad wants to see Devil Wears Prada in theaters.
Your dad wants
to see it. My dad's funny. But I'd wonder if with a Devil Wear Prada, or would be hell would be too hot, maybe the clothes would burn off. You know? Like, does the devil wear clothing? You know?
I'm just letting you go.
Would they wear Prada, Gucci? Maybe they would shop at Marshall's, get a deal. Maybe they would steal clothing. Maybe they would steal Prada. Maybe
Devil's a fashion diva in disguise.
D- Did you see the first movie?
I did. Yeah, I did.
So,
I liked what,
so you liked the first
movie? Yeah, I liked it. It was fun, yeah.
Did you think it needed a sequel? Do you care what happens to these characters?
You know what? I forget every movie, so I don't really know what the hell happened. I kind of
remember being there.
You know, I just
the
like
theater.
Put on a movie and it's an experience. It's like eating. You know, it's like okay, I kind of you know disassociate.
You enjoyed it for the moment, and then it's
yeah.
To move
unless
on.
I have to interview someone, I kind of just space out, get into the vibe. But I couldn't tell you what happened 4 minutes in, or unless it's my job, and then I'll really pay attention. I got enough scripts to pay attention. If I put a movie on, it's just like all right. This is my free. Let's like space out and enjoy, you know.
All right, sure.
Yeah.
They're working on a part three.
They're already
for
working
Prada?
On a part three.
But
they,
was Prada, yeah.
That makes sense. Doing.
Made a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense.
So moving
Prada
on.
Prada placement.
Moving on from the. There's literally a video of him saying it department.
Uh-oh.
None other than Disney and James Cameron are being sued by actress, oh boy, Q-O-R-I-A-N-K-A,
mm-hmm.
Kurianka
mm-hmm.
Kilcher, for, quote, unauthorized use of her likeness and foundation in Neytiri in the film Avatar. According to the documents, like, man, she alleges that when she was 14, she had recently appeared in Pocahontas in the film The New World, James extracted her facial features from a published photograph and directed his team to use it as foundation for the character Neytiri in Avatar. Neytiri would be the main lead, which is Zoe Saldana.
Okay.
Lawyer says, Kurianka's likeness, I'm sorry if I'm messing up your name, was replaced in production sketches, was replicated in production sketches, sculpted into three-dimensional marquettes, laser scanned into high-resolution digital models, and distributed across multiple visual effects, vendors' forms to characters' image. The image was later seen in theaters, on posters, in merchandise, across sequels and re-releases without her knowledge or consent. What Cameron did was not inspirational. It was extraction. He took the unique biometric facial features of a 14-year-old indigenous girl, ran them through an industrial production process, and generated billions of dollars in profit without ever once asking her permission. This is not filmmaking.
Hmm.
This is theft.
Hmm.
Now, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, before the film was ever made, James met
mm-hmm.
Oh boy.
Q.
Yes, met Q at an event. He then personally invited her to visit his office.
Right.
1 week later, Cameron was out and a member of his staff presented her with a framed print of a sketch James had made. Attached to the print was a handwritten note from James reading, quote, "Your beauty was my early inspiration for Neytiri. Too bad you were shooting another movie. Next time." Now, there's a video online right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and
mm-hmm.
see James Cameron talking about behind the scenes that he clearly points out that girl in that picture that he used
mm-hmm.
is the use for the basis for the movie. He's like, that's my character. Go make her this.
Right.
Kurianka says, you want to read that?
When I received Cameron's sketch, I believed it was a personal gesture. At most, a loose inspiration tied to casting and my activism. Millions of people opened their hearts to Avatar because they believed in its message, and I was one of them. I never imagined that someone I trusted would systematically use my face as part of an elaborate design process and integrate it into a product pipeline without my knowledge or consent. That crosses a major line. This act is deeply wrong. It is deeply disturbing to learn that my face, as a 14-year-old girl, was taken and used without my knowledge or consent to help create a commercial asset that has generated enormous value for Disney and Cameron.
So she seeks compensatory and punitive damages, profits available to the use of her likeness, including injunctive relief and corrective public disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find
mm-hmm.
this to be a very interesting
mm-hmm.
topic because I can actually see both sides of the argument.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is because, as you know, Jen,
mm-hmm.
we have you as a cover on my book,
right?
Right. And when I created my characters, when I originally told the artist, way back when, 30 years ago, I told the artist, my lead is going to be like a Britney Spears type. So I envisioned Britney Spears. If I had the money at the time, I could have hired Britney Spears. She would have been...
Now or later.
Back then.
Yeah.
So the artist took his... Britney Spears. And he drew it. It didn't look anything like Britney Spears, but that was always my idea.
Right, right.
And so anytime any other artist was to draw my character, I always said she was my envisioner for Britney Spears. So then, as you were very well aware,
yeah.
We talked about you cosplaying as my character.
Yeah.
You had the outfit.
Right.
You had a wig.
Right.
You took pictures of the outfit and the wig.
Mm-hmm.
I then took those pictures of you in the outfit and the wig
mm-hmm.
and sent it to the cover artist, Russ Braun, who works on The Boys,
mm-hmm.
and said, "Hey, Russ, this is what the outfit looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I imagined her to look like Britney Spears."
Right.
And I also sent her a picture, sent him a picture of Elisha Cuthbert from
right.
24
right.
And in a specific pose. And I said, "This is the idea I have for a pose.
Yeah.
This is what I want." And I sent it to Russ.
Right.
All that without giving consent to Britney Spears, without giving
right.
consent to Elisha Cuthbert, without any of that. And then he drew.
Well, luckily it looks like me, not
But
them.
That's the thing.
So thank God.
So we actually...
Thank God it was nothing like Britney Spears.
I actually had talked to Russ about
right.
the cover
right.
for issue one, and a lot of people have said that you look like the
yeah.
image on the cover. I was
Similar.
Like, well, that wasn't the intent.
Ah.
However, he did use
yeah.
your picture
yeah, I think so.
As reference.
Right.
So, my question is, I don't know the law, but they turned her into a blue alien. So
right.
they're not actually using... her exact likeness,
mm-hmm.
and there's like homage, there's parody laws,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of laws, so I don't know the law, but
mm-hmm.
it's one thing if like they AI digitally made it her,
mm-hmm.
it's another if they used her as a reference
mm-hmm.
and made an alien, so I don't know if they have a case or
but
not,
the,
because
yeah.
it's not her.
But
yeah.
the problem
yeah.
is, it is her, according to James
right,
Cameron's
exactly.
video,
like
that
he said it.
Well,
said
as a reference,
he said that
she
yeah.
wasn't, but her face is not the final rendition because
right.
it's an alien.
Right, but his exact
right.
words was, "This is Nichiren." He
yeah.
said
but,
it.
But
on
what
the
I
video.
Mean is, I mean, I don't know the law, but I don't know if he did anything illegal. Is my like,
right.
I don't know if he needed her legal permission
right.
if she's just a reference.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know.
And
because
that's the question: how much, how far
term.
Do you go for
right.
the reference?
Yeah.
Or how far do you go? Like, oh, I want to make. I'm gonna make. There was a movie that you did. When you're a radio person, the movie
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That they said that they wrote the script specifically for you.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
What was the name of the movie?
The Airwaves.
The
coming
Airwaves.
Out next month, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they said that specifically for you. They said it was written for you.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say they got somebody else
yeah. well,
to
that
be
would
in
be insane.
The movie.
Yeah.
But they're saying, oh, it was you. So
right.
you have the ability to be like, hey, you said it was for me. You specifically
yeah.
said,
yeah.
this is me.
Yeah.
Do you have grounds for, or what are your thoughts on that whole...
Well, that would be different because that would be the whole script is written based on me and then you give it to someone else, which actually
and
there's someone we know
who
sent me a message after I watched the Hedy Lamarr documentary. I'm like, this, I'm afraid of people stealing my ideas. And two people told me, watch out for someone. You know this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, he's going to steal ideas. And I get a voice message one day. Hey, I think I'm going to do what we did together and do it with some other people on the island. It's like, no, it's my idea. It's my concept. It's my everything. And all you did was hold the camera. So... you know, whatever. There's all different levels of nuance. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see what the law is. But I guess I'm not litigious. But if someone's saying on video, hey, we're taking your face and they have bazillions of dollars, I mean, it's beyond millions, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's probably to the billions level.
Right. This was.
I'm sure they could throw her a few thousand
yeah.
for her face. You know, you're saying it on camera, you
right.
know, and
right.
give her something, you know, a couple cents. Like, come on, you know. And I'm not someone who would, like, ask for it. I'm pretty generous. I'm like, yeah, deep fake me. I don't care. Like,
so we haven't had an official response from Disney or James Cameron.
Yeah.
And the reason why Disney is involved is because Disney bought Fox.
Right.
Fox was Avatar and James Cameron. So we
right.
haven't heard from them yet.
Hmm.
But we do know that Disney loves this type of thing where they're like, you know, no money for nobody.
Yeah.
And if you remember, they had we were talking about the lady that got the died in the amusement park with the food poisoning. And they were like, oh, it's, they would try to sue Disney. And they're like, oh, no, you can't sue us because it was a self-standing eatery in Disney World.
Okay.
It was a big thing.
Right, right,
and
right.
Disney has also notoriously have not allowed people to use their characters on tombstones.
Right.
Or, like, so Disney, this is bad for
right,
Disney.
Right.
But it is James Cameron, who's his own person.
Yeah.
So I think it's very interesting. And where would it go? And
I don't think
it would
be something with James Cameron. I think he's going to have to give up.
Right. I think
yeah.
it's on the side that he doesn't have to, but he should.
Right.
I think he should give out some money. If that was the inspiration.
And
he made
yeah.
a giant bag of money off of it.
Right.
If there's a loophole,
right.
I mean, morally, yeah. If there's
right.
a loophole in the law, I would imagine it's because it's not actually her. They use it as a reference, and it's a digital alien. That mm-hmm. might be a loophole.
That
I don't know the
Disney's,
law.
Disney's
that
offense,
might be yeah, the same way they use that. Oh, that's a freestanding business on our property. It's
right.
Well, it's based on her, but it's actually this blue alien. Is she a blue alien?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So who mm-hmm. knows? They have the
yeah.
top-notch
yeah.
lawyers, you know. So they'll know every angle to take. I'm
sure.
sure.
Well, you do that as well. Some of your characters are based. You have your tragedy is based on your wife. Right,
personality-wise, but
I really
the Tyler Kirkham cover actually, he never saw my wife, but it looks a lot like her.
So let's say some reason she decides to sue the artist, be like, hey, that's me.
Right,
where's my cut? Or is it because you? I mean, you did say.
Well, I think morally she should get something. But
right.
Again, courts aren't moral.
Right. Right.
The
right,
law
right,
is
right.
not about morality. It's about how to bend it.
Yeah.
And how to break it.
Yeah.
So, speaking
we'll
of
see.
The law, this is another crazy one. From thee, that's one way to stop people from spoiling a movie department. In Japan, copyright and intellectual property laws can be quite different from those in North America. So, a 39-year-old man named Waturu Tenchikui posted a detailed description of Godzilla Minus One's story from early 2023 to 2024, which got him arrested and sentenced to a year and a half in prison with a $1 million yen, which is about $6,000 U.S. fine. Japan's Overseas Distribution Association, or CODA for short, says... Numerous websites that extract text from movies and other content have been identified and are considered problematic as so-called spoiler sites. While these actions tend to be perceived as less serious than piracy sites or illegal uploads that upload the content itself, they are clear copyright infringements that go beyond the scope of fair use and are serious crimes. The problem with websites that extract text from movies or other content is that they reduce the willingness to pay fair price for the content, leading people to not watch the official full-length movies and causing significant damage to right holders. Furthermore, the act of infringing on content creators that have harvested time, effort, and money in producing and unfairly obtaining advertising revenue from such sites is extremely malicious and should never be tolerated. Mm-hmm. CODA will closely monitor the details of this case as they unfold during future investigations and criminal trials and will continue to strive for the proper protection of copyrights and implement effective measures against similar websites. This activity was conducted as part of a project commissioned by the Ministry of Economy, Trade, and Industry. So, Jen, what do you think of somebody spoiling a movie online and then getting arrested and thrown in jail with a fine?
Absolutely stupid. First of all, I've never heard this, but I don't believe in spoilers because, again, I see movie watching and things as an experience.
Right.
And I will not have that experience no matter how much you describe. Like, I heard It and I heard Human Centipede described by two people, and I feel like I've seen it, and I still don't want to see either one because whatever, I don't want to see such horror. But it's not the same, and this is absolutely ridiculous. Anything, it's advertising. I can see if they're taking pictures and screenshots. But a description, to me, that's free promotion. So this is nuts to me.
Phil, what are your thoughts?
Well, as an IP creator myself, it would really depend on what I would want to keep under wraps and if you're blowing that. If you're spoiling something that you want to keep under wraps and you feel it could hurt the film, I can see you wanting to pursue some sort of punitive damage, but I wouldn't say jail time. You know, maybe the
jail
fine,
time, yeah.
But put them in jail, really? I mean, you know, let's, you know, maybe a little fine just to make sure you people don't decide to do the same thing again. But it would depend on how serious it was, you know. It also depends on what level you're at. Like a guy like me, it, like you said, it's marketing for me. If someone's talking about any of my books and they want to write a blog, thank you, go for it.
Right.
If an artist wants to draw my characters and sell it as a commission at a show, I'm not going to stop them. But by law, can I? Yeah.
Mm,
of
yeah.
course I can. Anybody draws tragedy, I could sit there and give them a C&D, a cease and desist.
That makes sense.
What I know, because at my level it's really helpful, but even now with Marvel and DC, I think as long as it's not more than they would spend in marketing, they'll let it go. But when it comes to movies, it could be damaging if you're spoiling plot lines or surprises. I don't believe in jail time, but I could see them legally trying to at least cease and desist, you know? But it was kind of a harsh penalty.
Well, or they can make them watch Black Panther over and over and over. That would be torture. That was
you remember
a boring
that
movie. I wrote notes I wrote notes the whole time. I'm still bored.
Okay.
I'm still bored. So I'd rather clean public bathrooms than watch that movie again. I really would.
How about
so
private
horrible.
Bathrooms? Because my house is a mess.
Or that. You know what? That, yeah.
You actually, that's an interesting point.
Right.
That you were typing in that you were bored while you were watching.
Yeah, because I'm writing the review.
And let's say.
I said I'd review it.
Let's say somebody that Disney wants
right,
to get.
Oh, right, right,
like,
right.
Hey.
In Japan.
You can't, yeah, you can't be talking about that. They'll arrest you and throw you in jail.
You know,
for
I didn't
want to
see it. I didn't want to talk about it either. You know, it's like.
But according to them, they're saying that by your saying, oh, it's a boring movie, I'm bored in
you know,
while
and
I'm
this
doing
is
it.
Why people are going to go on Instagram and TikTok and watch these influencers, and they're going to take over because you're just driving people away more and more. You know, there's a problem for everything with these
but
people.
But that also opens up a big problem, too, though, because if you can get in trouble for bad-mouthing a movie, what happens if you bad-mouth my publishing company? Do I get to sue you and throw you in jail because you did? Is that some sort of defamation of my company? You know?
Also, not only is it just bad nothing, but you are, at least according to Japan, you're taking away money that would have been made.
But again, how can you
yeah.
prove that? You know,
that's
you can't prove loss until
true.
There's loss.
True.
Right. So that's, in America, that wouldn't fly.
Well,
and
this
isn't even criticism. This is just a description.
He just,
right?
just said what's going to happen.
It's not even
Godzilla destroys buildings. Like, wow, who thought that was going to happen?
Who ruined the plot for a Godzilla movie?
This is crazy.
Movie?
So it's, I think it's, once again, a very interesting, nuanced
yeah.
thing, which might, I mean, it is Japan, so it's a different culture.
Sure.
Right. But if this happened here, I think it would be the
yeah, yeah.
Line.
Could happen.
You're right.
It couldn't happen.
What would happen to all these movie reviewers? What are they going to do
yeah.
with themselves?
It would
you
be
know?
So.
I mean, it also depends, too. Like, you know, sometimes you get an NDA, and if you break the NDA, then
right.
you're subject to law. But there's no NDA here. He's just,
no, it's just
saying
some guy
going on.
Hey, this,
it was
this
harsh. It wouldn't happen here in America. If we get to that point, we're really in trouble.
Yeah.
So, here's a little fun tidbit. I actually have managed to watch a couple of movies that have not come out yet.
Uh-huh.
I have not signed an NDA.
No.
But I have seen the Hot Wheels movie.
Okay.
Starring John Cena.
Okay. Uh-oh.
And I'm just saying, I've seen it, and I'd be like, but will my review or description of
right.
that movie affect people going to see a Hot Wheels movie with John Cena and Jessica Biel? Like, if you just say, there's a Hot Wheels movie with John Cena and Jessica Biel, who's going to watch that movie?
I don't know.
But that's the same thing. So I think it's very interesting where the line was
yeah.
going to be, and it all depends if this stuff manages to make its way over to the United States. But in Japan,
right.
don't say nothing about nothing. Just
right.
go see a movie.
Unless they're trying to increase censorship and scare people.
And the other thing is, it's not like they sent him a cease and desist and he denied, you know, he ignored it. I mean,
right.
shouldn't he get some sort of warning before
different
he...
Different culture, different
I know,
different.
Especially since how you can't prove punitive damages based
well,
on speculation.
They're saying it's a spoiler site. They put a spoiler
yeah.
and it ruins the movie experience.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
then don't
many,
go to Japan.
Right.
I'm reviewing
yeah,
anything.
I'm not going to Japan now.
How
I'm
many
done.
Times big movies come out? And they now everything's all on the first weekend. That's the biggest box. Everybody cares about that first weekend,
right.
nothing else. And they go and they put on, don't put spoilers on the internet because
right.
they want people to go
yeah.
and enjoy the movie. And people who would have the movie spoiled, like, I'm not going to go watch it now because they know how it ends.
Right.
So that does kind of qualify as a
well,
loss
you know,
of revenue. Sorry.
But again, you have to prove it, though. You
right.
have, in a court of law, you have to prove that you lost that revenue. Otherwise, it's speculation. And
true.
So the truth is, the reason why we have these first weekends is because those are the people that love the movie experience or they're really diehard on that and they want to see it. Everybody else is the casual, yeah, I want to see it, but I'd rather see it in the comfort of my own home.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that really... The people that really want to see it are going to see it. Just like people who are broke are still going to find a way to charge their card if they really want a product. You know,
mm-hmm.
you find a way to get what you want and consume what you want, even
mm-hmm.
when you probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anybody who says they were turned off by a review, they probably were never going to go see it that first weekend anyway.
So I remember, before we take our break, I remember when I was at the comic book school I used to go to, New York Academy of Comic Book Arts and Fantasy Illustration, and one of the guys there had a bootleg copy of RoboCop 3.
Okay.
So he brought it in, and we watched RoboCop 3 in the school. I loved it,
mm-hmm.
and I went and I bought myself a ticket because I wanted to go see it. So.
So?
I saw the movie, and I still wanted to pay.
Well, it's
kind of
like people who buy a digital comic. They like it, and now they want the physical. They say, you know what, I want to own it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So that is it for the news. So we're going to take a quick break in front of a live studio audience.
Yay!
We'll be right back with more It Came From the Radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From The Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I'm here in front of a live studio audience.
Hey.
At the East Metal Public Library for our 104th live show. I'm with my co-host who just ran away, Jenny Felley. She'll be back in just a few minutes. But I'm here with Mr. Phil Russert, who we're going to be talking to with and about.
Howdy ho, good neighbors.
Phil, we've known you for quite some time. And you have actually found your way to not only have your own comic, but a plethora of your own comic book line. And then you decided to take it one step further, and we've had you on the show before when you announced that you were doing a distribution company. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing a distribution company, and it's really successful. It's doing quite well. Like, people are talking about you. It's a small comic book world. It's a small world. People know each other, and your name is coming up to people who I don't know you. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how it got so big? Well, first, let's talk about what the distribution company is and how did it get to where it's at right now.
So we are worldwide distribution, same as Diamond, Lunar, all of them, obviously on a smaller scale. We're about to hit our one-year anniversary of our first catalog. We specialize in the small press that wasn't getting an opportunity. Distribution worldwide is basically direct market to the stores, the comic book stores. We have stores in Japan, Sweden, UK, France, Germany, Australia, Canada, Mexico, and all over the United States, and we're growing. And what we do is we put out our catalog and we solicit to these stores and we get small press books out there the same way Marvel and DC go through Lunar and Universal and all of them. Our terms are a little different. They're a little more fair across the board so that publishers can succeed as well as retailers. And now we just added the print-on-demand aspect, which actually just makes it a one-stop shop for everybody. I'm creating my own little ecosystem.
That's awesome.
Within the industry, because a lot of middlemen are taking all the money. The creators and the retailers are not making any money. And I wanted to create a system where, even though I'm technically a middleman, I'm not gouging prices. I'm keeping them down. I make a modest profit, but everybody else can win as well. And it's just healthy for the industry overall if everyone is walking away with a modicum of success. So even if you're a small publisher and you sell 5 books, you're still going to make some money off that book, mm-hmm. as opposed to being in the red on top of your production costs. It gives the opportunity for people to grow a fan base, get out there across the world, and potentially get out of these echo chambers that we're in on Kickstarter or on Facebook, mm-hmm. that you have a chance to grow your IP, grow your publishing company that you didn't have before. And of course, I have my own publishing imprint that I put through my own distribution, and I'll be printing my own books. So when I'm cutting out the middleman for me, which obviously helps me greatly, it's really just a philosophy of rising tides raise all ships. I can still win and make a profit and have a successful business by making money with everyone, not off of them.
That's awesome.
We've talked about Diamond many times.
Yeah,
remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah, because you know they're pretty much done.
Yeah,
Phil is kind of taking a little bit of that Diamond implosion for yourself to try and help out the independent publishers. Do you think you would have done that had Diamond not imploded in such a glorious fashion?
Yes. I'm a very feisty Irishman, and I don't like being told I can't get in the ring and fight. Life is not a spectator sport. I'm not going to watch you fight. I'm not asking for to hand me the belt, but you're sure as hell not going to tell me I can't fight for it. I was looking at the industry and how it's kind of gatekept and Diamond and everything, and I said, why am I relying on somebody else for my future? I was like, maybe I should start this myself. And then I found out through people I know in the industry, I know I'm a nobody who knows a lot of somebodies. The writing was on the wall, and I knew Diamond was going to go down. I even knew pretty much when. So I decided to build the infrastructure, get every store in the world, the list of every store in the world, and really build this up And I knew when Diamond was going to announce their bankruptcy, so I announced my distribution 3 weeks prior.
Wow.
I even knew that they weren't just going bankrupt, they were going down. I did tell a lot of people to get their inventory out of there.
Mm.
Fortunately, I'm a nobody. Nobody listened to me.
Oh, really?
A lot of people lost their inventory through
Damn.
Diamond. So, yes and no. Yes, I was going to eventually do it, but I think it was the catalyst to do it as soon as I did.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are now a distribution company, aren't you going to run into the same problems that other distribution companies do? I mean, Diamond, as you mentioned, was a gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So now isn't that upon you that you're going to be like, I have to decide what goes in my book, what doesn't go in my book, what's good enough to be published through me, what's not good enough to be published through me, what reflects off of us? It's kind of the same thing that Diamond does. So,
not to their degree, though.
Okay.
Diamond would say, we don't think this art is sellable.
Huh.
Art, to me, is subjective. I'm not going to dictate whether the art in your book is good enough. The only thing that we really need a criteria of is the professionalism of the product, how it looks. Like, it can't look like your three-year-old did the logo. And how is the sequential storytelling? I may not care for the art. Art is subjective. Some people love Bill Sienkiewicz's art and think he's a legend. Some don't. Some love Mike Mignola and don't because he doesn't draw shoulders. You know, it's all subjective. But if you can tell a story properly through sequential work, then let the free market decide. I'm not going to decide for you. So our only criteria is that the product has a professional logo and look to it, the print quality is professional, and that the sequential storytelling, you know, is on par with what's on the shelves. And then I'm not a proponent of NSFW really, but I'm not going to censor it. Other than if you have an NSFW cover, we want you to black bag it, because as a parent especially, I don't want my child walking in to pick up Spider-Man and there's a nude cover right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that hurts the industry because that mother's never coming back with her kid into a comic store.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the most we gatekeep. Other than that, I have terms that are a little different that, you know, I'm getting some resistance from retailers, like we're a prepay, because Diamond lost millions in unpaid invoices.
Right.
And the reality of it is, we are not Marvel and DC. And if you're a store owner, and we know that they struggle and they're working hard to keep their doors open, and they just got a $10,000 bill from Lunar or Universal, and they got the $500 or $600 bill from me, and their kid needed braces that week, or it was a bad month, someone's going to have to get put to the side. Who's that going to be? It's going to be me. Of course it's going to be me. And I have an obligation to the publishers, as much as I do to the retailers, to make this work. And the publishers, instead of waiting 8 weeks to get paid out or not getting paid out ever because of a circumstance like that, with my prepay terms, the stores are guaranteed to get their books, but the publishers are also guaranteed to get their money. And I think it's fair across the board for everyone. We have over 600 stores signed up, and they're fine with it. They're fair with it. There's some old school resistance, which is understanding. I mean, they were getting a net 30 or net 60, which means they get billed later. They get the books, and they don't have to pay for 30, 60
mm-hmm.
days, which there's nowhere else in retail that really
mm-hmm.
does that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting free shipping, 50% discount. So they were getting a lot in their favor. And when you're Diamond and you're the monopoly and you have the big name, big companies, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But once they started to lose Marvel and DC, you can't sustain that model when
mm-hmm.
you have small. And that's when they still have bigger guys like Dynamite and everything. I don't even have guys that big. I have Zenoscope, Antarctic Press, etc. But we're not on that level to where I can afford to kind of throw that money out there.
Yeah.
And I'm not a venture capitalist. We're going to be, with the POD, we're going to be giving better incentives and more discounts to these stores. But we're going to keep the prepay because we think it's fair. We've proven over the year that you will get your merchandise. And if for whatever reason, you know, a publisher falls through and you don't get anything, we will refund the money. We have it there for you, you know. So we've built a great customer service relationship with our stores over the past year, and they'll tell you the same.
Jenny, you got a question?
I think you mentioned toying with this idea, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago when you were on. What's the most difficult thing about doing this, and what's the most rewarding thing?
Well, I'll start with rewarding.
Yeah.
Rewarding is that you get to see people's dreams come true, even on a small stage. Again, it's giving people a channel, an opportunity to just do something they didn't before, because as much as Kickstarter is great, it's not really meant to be an independent distribution, and that's what people started using it for, and it's imploding.
Mm.
And Kickstarter has its algorithms that bury you, and you're in an ecosystem, an echo chamber, and it's difficult. So this, it's rewarding to see publishers excited and seeing opportunities that they may not have had. The hard part is I'm new, I'm small, gaining respect, gaining trust with retailers, and you do tend to work with some people that publishers that have quality products, but maybe they don't understand the business yet, and they're learning as they go, and you know, it requires patience and bandwidth on my part to kind of walk them through all of it so I can help them be successful. Am I technically responsible for that? No, but you know, I want to see everybody win, you know, so.
So, since you are your own publisher, that does remind me of when Disney/Marvel decided to stop publishing certain comics because they didn't own the properties, the Fox properties, the X-Men. They decided to push that aside because they're like, why should I promote something that we don't own entirely? Do you have that conflict of interest to promote your stuff over somebody else's? And how do you manage to deal with that? And how do you manage to deal with the backlash of somebody accusing you of that?
It's a great question. Honestly, I have a guy from Argentina that is a book Knight that we put through a distribution. We do G-Men Comics. We have Sergeant Flag. And they both have ads in all my tragedy books. I promote all the time. We do extra things like give them covers on our catalog, as well as other independents. So, I mean, of course, I'm pushing my publishing hard, but I do try to push them hard as well, because honestly, my name is on it for a reason, and they're relying on me for a reason. And I have this thing where I feel responsible. I'm putting them on my shoulders and to a degree in the distribution aspect. Like they're successful on their own, they're doing their own thing, but they came to me to provide a service, and I would feel bad if I wasn't providing that service properly. So luckily I've never been accused of not promoting. But if they were to, then I would have to take a look and say, is there merit to this accusation or not? And then I'd have to sit and have a conversation with them. I would hope that accusation would be an internal thing, of course, but you know, there's a saying, you can't please everybody all the time, right? So you just, it really depends on the situation, how it comes. But so far, I have a great relationship with all the people that I've been publishing.
And on the same logic line, if for some reason your books decide to not sell, or you're not doing well with your books, will you still continue the distribution?
Absolutely. I didn't just do this distribution for my own books. To be honest with you, it wouldn't have worked if it was just tragedy by itself anyway. You know, stores don't want to order from individual publishers because then they have 500, 5,000 people to order from. They need a distribution hub. But this has really taken on its life of its own. I mean, when I started the distribution, I had to say to myself, how much of this is for me and how much is this for everybody? And it really is the same thing, because the health of the industry includes me. And if I look short term, like, you ever go to a convention and there's the Carnival Barker guy that's trying to push everybody to get the sales?
Yes.
He may have had a good show, but every one of those people is probably not coming back for a sale because they felt pressured into it, or they felt uncomfortable, or they're going to avoid that aisle. So that's a short term gain. That's the grifter mentality that has hurt the industry. But if I look at it as long-term growth, meaning the more I do for the health of the industry, I am now part of that industry, it's going to trickle down to me as well while I'm helping others. So I don't buy into that it's me or you. Like, you have your book designated. You're not my competition. You're my brother in arms. You're in the community. There's enough people to go around that might like both our books. Or maybe they like your book and they don't like mine, but it's still the health of the industry. We're building the economy in the comic world. We're getting readership back. And there are plenty of readers that, even if they don't want my book and they want yours, they may tell their cousin, hey, check out Designated. And then, by the way, I don't really care for it, but do you like this book, Tragedy? It, you know what I'm saying? It's this ripple effect. You know, it's long-term growth through the health of the industry will not only help other people, but it'll help myself. There's no reason I can't help myself and help others equally. And it's just a good thing across the board because we want readers back.
Jen, question?
What's a book that was submitted that you had to deny, or any topics that you had to deny?
I don't deny genre or topic, but I hate when I have to deny a submission. I really, really hate it because I feel bad. I don't ever want to be the reason someone doesn't pursue their dreams, but there have been people I've had to turn away. And it was the sequential storytelling was just not there. Like, I felt the art was raw, and it wasn't my kind of art, but that wasn't the reason. It was stiff panels. You couldn't really follow what was going on. There wasn't any energy or dynamics in the comic. And I have to look at that and say, unfortunately, I don't think this is a book that's going to sell anything. And I'm spending money to onboard that book and to onboard that person. And I have to put on the business cap and take away the fan cap. And I have to say, if I'm going to spend this money and this bandwidth and time to onboard this person and get them out there, knowing that they're not going to sell books, I have to say, I'm sorry. I can't, you're not ready yet. And what I tell them in the rejection letter is, we are not rejecting you. We're telling you you're not ready yet. Come back to us when you get the sequentials down. And it's really based on the sequential storytelling. It has to make sense. It has to be cohesive. There has to be a standard for the storytelling aspect. You know, who am I to say what's good or bad art? I mean, now there is a level of art that I have turned away where it's the eye is here. And, you know, I mean, that's obviously just not ready. And the other thing is AI. We will not accept any written AI or any art AI. And we put everything, even if we don't suspect, through two engines. And we've had some people that would have got through if we didn't do that because they touched it up with AI. Mm. We're not doing that. AI is a no-no for us at Philbo Publishing and Distribution. And we make it clear, we're sorry, but we do not accept AI books. And that's it. And that includes if you had it written by ChatGPT. And you can tell when it's written by ChatGPT.
What about Putin? What if Putin submitted a book, or Trump? Would you take a book from Putin?
It's funny that you asked that, because I've had conversations with ComicsGate people.
Comicsgate?
They're considered conservative and right-wing, and there's this ideological conflict politically. I don't give a crap about tribalism.
Uh-huh.
Comics are the thing that is supposed to unite everybody, whether you're a Biden fan or Trump fan. I don't care about all that. In the comic world, it's about comics and storytelling. We are a business. I am not here to censor or pick sides. I could easily have Eric Larson, who's very liberal, put a book through me, and I could have Ethan Van Sciver put a book through me. Their beliefs and politics do not represent me. I'm simply just a channel to put their books out there and let the free market decide who should be bought or not. And that's it. I'm not here to morally pass judgment on anybody because I'm not God. I'm just a distributor. I'm the mailman. Imagine your mailman said, I can't deliver your mail because you have a Trump sign or a Biden sign. I don't do that. That's none of my business. I don't even want to know. Now, if you're an outright racist or somebody and you use language that is defamatory and stuff like that, well, then no, I can't support that. You know what I mean? I mean, there's one thing if you're writing a character in a story that talks that way. That's the character. But if you yourself are speaking that way online, then I wouldn't deal with that, because now you are promoting a certain hate that I have to kind of step in and say, I can't promote that platform.
So how do you go about doing that? So if you get a new submission, do you go through all the social media stuff and look?
Believe it or not, we do. We go to your social media. We look at what you're posting, what you're doing. I don't care if you post pro-Trump or pro-Biden, but if you were to sit there and use extremely derogatory, racist remarks towards anybody or promoting death, I'm not doing that. I wouldn't wish death on anybody. I also look at it like this. I am now getting into a business marriage with this person. And I don't know if that is going to work if you're this kind of person. You know, so we do. We look at your social media. We look at your platform. We look at all that. And if you're a retailer, we vet you as well. We look and see, you know, you have to submit your tax ID number. You have to submit a website where you're selling from. And we have to look and see if you're legit or not, because we're giving wholesale discounts. And we can't be giving it just to the public. It can't be just Bob who pretends to be Bob's store because he wants to get everything at 40, 50% off. Mm. So we vet everyone. We have to.
How far back does the vetting process go? A year, 2 years,
oh, yeah.
5 years?
No. Honestly, you know a person in the last probably couple of months of what they're posting, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. And I don't have the time to go years back. I'll go mm-hmm. back a couple of months. If the person's very benign over like the first 20 posts, I probably don't go any further. But if you see something that kind of red flags you, then you look a little further, and then you look a little further. I have people that help with research and stuff like that. We try not to, like I said, we try not to be partisan in any way, like bipartisan, where we're saying, I don't agree with your philosophy, so blah, blah, blah. It's not about disagreeing with a philosophy. It's are you, you know, it would have to be extremism, you know, like hateful rhetoric, harmful, that would create violence. Now, you may say that's subjective. Mm-hmm. No, I'm talking about actual saying that person should be harmed in this way or that way. I'm not talking about someone's opinion of they're a jerk or I don't agree with this. That's you have a right to an opinion, you know. So
we have about like 8 minutes left. Let's talk about your books. What books do you have going on here?
A lot. So we have a horror anthology, Diary of Dread, which the storyboard artist of the Creepshow TV show loved and said the last story actually disturbed them. I was like, yes. I was told by a horror fan that I must have some secret psycho in me. But anyway, mm-hmm. it sells very well. People enjoy it. It's a 156-page anthology in the vein of Tales from the Crypt, Creepshow. And it's a fun, straight-up gory horror book. It's mature audiences. Then on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have The Dynamics, which is a family of superheroes, and it's a book that a father or a mother can sit down with their child and read. And I'm proud of that book because, you know, you look at Pixar books or whatever, and some or stories, and sometimes to get the parent interested, they'll throw in an innuendo. And then that causes a question for the kid, like, what did that mean? And now the parent's like, how do I explain this? There's none of that in this book. It's just wholesome family fun. It's funny. It's got action, adventure. And I highly recommend it. If you have kids that don't like reading, it's a good gateway into getting them maybe to start reading on some level. You could sit with them, enjoy it. Sorry, that was an accident. We have Papa, which is a very personal tale to me. It's about a 75-year-old Vietnam vet who is protecting his family from the Yakuza and the Italian Mafia. I can't get into details. It has a twist.
No that spoilers?
It has a twist at the end of the first issue that catches everybody off guard. Chuck Dixon, the writer of Batman, Punisher, Robin, he wrote Nightfall, loves the book. He said the dialogue is very real, and he got caught off guard by the twist. So if you don't believe me, ask Chuck. It's a fun story, but it's also kind of goes into the sacrifices that fathers and men make that go unnoticed, and how men will silently go to that job they hate, strap on those boots, do what they got to do even when they're working on their eternal demons, and they'll still come home and answer that toy phone for their daughter. You know, we don't get our flowers. On Father's Day, we barbecue our own meal. You know, we love women. I appreciate women. Without women, there'd be no life. But I did want to just talk about men for a little while, because we make those silent sacrifices and we don't ask for anything in return. And I just wanted to do that. And it's in honor of my dad who passed away. He was bench pressing 165 pounds at 77 years old. 5 weeks, an aggressive cancer took him. And he didn't get to see the book before he died. But he did get to read the script. And he liked it. We have Arcane Syndicate, which is the Universal Monsters as a government agency that fights supernatural threats that affect the world. I was told that it was the most fun read a 40-year veteran of comics had in the last 20 years. We have Withered, which is, a long story short, it's angels versus demons. But time is not a construct of our mind. It's actually this omnipotent being that imprisoned God, and that's why the world is not perfect. And it satiates itself off of our life energy. That's why we grow old, we wither, and we die. But the angels, archangels that survived the war, actually recruit faithful people before they die to be angels, to fight the war, to rescue God and bring upon the utopia that we were supposed to have. We've got Shaman is a telepath, telekinetic, that uses his abilities. He's the son of a Baptist minister. He uses them to heal people. Well, pharmaceutical companies are losing a lot of money in that district. So they have ties with the Mexican cartel, and they send assassins to kill this kid. And even though he's powerful, he's just a young boy, so he's scared and on the run. We have Tragedy, which is my flagship ship title, which is an Irish assassin that's living a life that she doesn't want to live. She doesn't think she can have a better life. She has issues with her adopted father, wanting and love, needing his love and respect, while at the same time hating him and herself for it. But it deals with Chinese mysticism, monsters, metahumans, assassins, and Chuck Dixon, Peter David, and rest in peace, and Howard Mackey said it's a really good book. That is an ongoing series in stores every month. We're on issue 8 with the Chris Pichalo cover, which is in stores as of today.
All right, so we're almost out of time. Social media, where can people find out more about you and your company?
The best way is through Facebook, my Philip Russer page, because it beats all the algorithms for having a business page. But you can also go Philbo Distribution, Philbo Publishing. You'll find me everywhere. If you just Google me, we're all over the place. We're in Comics Beat. We're in Bleeding Cool, Bleeding Fool. We're everywhere. We're on CBS. We're in, you know, we're in a lot of different
not
publications.
That CBS.
Yeah, no, we were all over. We were
CBS,
even,
CBS.
Yes, we were
not
even
Comics.
On Fox. We were on.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
We were on IGN, not IGN. I forgot that. What's the business Facebook?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn did an article on us, so we're all over the place. Go, so check us out.
All right, so you were kind enough to raffle off number ones of all your books, right?
Yes, every single book we've done, I've done.
And we're also raffling off 2 tickets to the Elite Comics Expo, which is at the end of this month at St. John's University, and they have a special guest, Jim Lee, who's going to be there on Sunday. So do you want to do the books first, or do you want the tickets to the convention first, or do you want to do them as both?
However you want to do it, it's fine.
You're the guest. You decide.
I guess we can raffle off the books first.
Books first.
The winner is going to get all the books here.
All right.
All right. And
no looking.
The winner is... The winner is... Thank you. I'm blind. 376739.
376739. All right.
Bingo!
We'll give you the book at the end of the show. We'll do that in one minute. And now for the passage to the Elite Comics 11 Expo.
It's 2 tickets, so it's 1 winner here?
Yeah, it's 1 winner.
Okay.
And that is what number?
The winner is 376743.
743-43-43.
Someone else.
He doesn't want to go, so I guess we'll just hold off on that. If they
all right,
go.
Then you hold it.
Wow.
Oh,
wow. All right, so
I want to go stack the books.
Almost out of time. Final thought.
I just want to say support independent publishing because it is not the stigma of back to the catalog you think. A lot of them are even working with former Marvel DC people. You're going to get passionate storytelling for the sake of storytelling, not agenda-driven, not corporate-driven. And you'd be surprised. You might find that title that becomes the next thing that you're really excited to read. So support independence and go check out www.philbodistribution.com.
Jen, do you have a final thought from over there?
Respect is the foundation of all relationships.
Agreed.
So my final thought is this. Thank you for being a guest on the show. Like I said, we've known you for a long time. It's really cool that you've, from where you started to where you're at, it's an amazing journey, and I hope the journey continues on.
Thank you.
So that about does it for this week on the Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you missed any part of the show, go to our website, www.acamfrio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Our next live show in front of a live studio audience.
Yay!
Will be on Wednesday, June 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will have award-winning musical theater writer and performer, Sar Kaufman. And they will be giving we're giving away 2 tickets to the Long Island Trick Convention. And they're also giving a book that they autographed. So with that, we'll see you all next time.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.